Chapter 26, Bergen-Belsen. So that we should not fall into the hands of the Allies, we were to be liquidated or evacuated. Soon the moment arrived. Again we were gathered in the roll call area and quickly loaded into waiting train cars. This time the trip did not last long. After a day's journey we arrived at Bergen-Belsen. This concentration camp was hopelessly overcrowded and we were not accepted. The right hand no longer knew what the left hand was doing. So we were sent to an adjoining Wehrmacht compound at Bergen-Belsen. As the soldiers of the Wehrmacht marched out, we moved in. The confusion was unbelievable. This time it was disorder with German perfection. For the first time we were moved into clean barracks. They were equipped for human beings, with excellent bathrooms and clean beds stacked three high. After all we had experienced in the preceding years, this was sheer luxury. There was no mention of the usual camp rituals, no roll calls and no work, but also no food. The kitchen and food supply were guarded by the SS and Hungarian soldiers, Hitler's allies. Hungry people searched every trash can and rubbish heap for potato peels or anything edible. After 2 or 3 days, there was absolutely nothing left to eat in the refuse of the huge compound. Most of the time, we lay in our beds, listening to and enjoying the approaching artillery fire. We lived on the good and bad news we heard, which changed from 1 hour to the next, but hunger continued to affect us. One rarely saw the SS anymore. We were guarded by Hungarian soldiers only. Every now and then, in the confusion, soup was supposedly distributed, but perhaps only one person heard about it, a second saw it, and a third actually received it. Perhaps. Regarding the camp hierarchy and maintenance, some of the prominent prisoners tried to take over. Among them were many Poles, so-called functionary prisoners. It was surprising to find that they were in such good condition. The other prisoners, especially the Jews, were so weak and exhausted that they could hardly stand. Still, there was nothing to eat, because there was absolutely nothing anywhere. My friends and I were emaciated. Our average weight must have been about 40 to 50 kilos. We spent most of our time lying in the Wehrmacht beds. We decided to wait, behave passively, and not to take any risks. The following 4 or 5 days passed without any food. Hunger and the headaches it caused became more unbearable with each passing hour. I suddenly fell into a deep depression and developed an indescribable fear. I believed that if I did not eat anything that day, I would not be alive on the next one. With the will to survive, I decided to act immediately. I dragged myself to the kitchen building, which was guarded by prisoners, mainly Poles. The outer ring around the building was composed of Hungarian soldiers. It was impossible to enter the kitchen through the main entrance. On the other side of the building, however, I noticed some small cellar windows which were open. Turnips were supposedly stored in that cellar. Those were the only edible things in the camp that I saw. They seemed to be my last hope for survival. I was firmly convinced of this. From time to time, prisoners crept through that window into the cellar. Afterward, they came out the same way or through the entrance with turnips. Some of the prisoners left beaten, others not. That I had to know someone in that building in order to come out in one piece was something I tried to forget. Besides, I had noticed that my Polish camp associate, Buson Bromberg, as he always introduced himself, was in the building. Perhaps I counted on him at that moment. I did not reflect very long. I gathered my pants tightly at the bottom to make room for the turnips. Thinking of Buson, I jumped into the cellar. I managed to get in, but how would I get out? I put a few turnips in my pants and started to negotiate with the Poles and Ukrainians who were waiting for me with clubs in their hands. Would they beat me to death? How many blows could I still stand? It was my misfortune that only 1 or 2 other people were in the cellar with me. Previous observations had convinced me that if the 3 or 4 people climbed out the cellar together, it was possible to escape with only a few bruises. Unfortunately, I was not that lucky. That possibility had to be rejected. My friend Buson suddenly appeared in front of me. As I confidently looked at him, a shower of blows rained down on me. I was bounced from one cellar post to the other with blood streaming down my face. I thought that I was unconscious for a short time, but Buson's vulgar Polish raillery against the Jews rang in my ears. I did not see him leave. That was the Pole, Buson of Bromberg. When I was able to move again, I considered the situation. It would have been stupid to leave the cellar empty-handed after that beating. Again, I filled my pants with turnips and told the guard in front of the windows that I would give them all the turnips if they would let me come out without hitting me. They agreed. First I stuck my head out, then half my body, while I threw the turnips farther and farther in front of me. The guards collected the turnips while holding their clubs. With the last and largest one in my hand, I ran out of the cellar. After being pummeled by Busan, one blow more or less was not that decisive anymore. I considered the operation successful. One single turnip with the spoils of my victory. I returned to my barrack, lay down on my bed, enjoyed my reward, and felt like a hungry animal after a predatory raid. I became more confident with each minute that passed, and felt that finally I had made it. With this one turnip, I could survive for at least 4 days. On the third day, the British outposts marched into Bergen-Belsen. It was April 15th, 1945, and I was alive.